Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
I'm Arielle Laurie, and this is the Blonde Files podcast, where I talk to experts, influencers, and inspirational people in the world of wellness and beyond. My guest today is Justin Janoska. If you haven't listened to Justin's other episode on my podcast, he was one of my first guests, and we talked all about flexible dieting, macros. He has a book out called The Flexible Dieting Disaster, and it is really fascinating, so I highly recommend going back and checking that out. A little bit about Justin. He is a clinician and the founder of The Autoimmune Revolution, an emerging company that guides women in their healing journey to reverse their autoimmune disease and reproductive disorder naturally, with specific attention on Hashimoto's, lupus, PCOS, and endometriosis. He holds a master's in human nutrition from the University of Bridgeport, but he has a very different and unique approach that emphasizes mind-body medicine, including childhood trauma and early adult stress. Through his work with clients, he helps them acquire a deeper understanding of how they got here, supports them to be with their pain, and embrace their truth. Justin and his team are committed to revolutionizing how we address and heal autoimmune disease in women. And I can attest to that. I have been working with Justin, and it is unlike any other practitioner I've worked with before. So guys, this topic was highly, highly requested. PCOS just seems to be so pervasive. I was really shocked by how many women reached out on my Instagram with questions about this. It's important to keep in mind that you're going to hear different opinions from different people. The thing that Justin really wanted me to emphasize in this intro that we talked about after we had stopped recording was that we can recover from PCOS. So many women get this diagnosis and think that it implies that they won't be able to have children, they'll have trouble conceiving, they'll be plagued with these health issues and hormone imbalances their whole life. And he really wanted me to emphasize that that is not the case. So it is a dense episode. It is fascinating. It is filled with information, and I hope you guys enjoy it. All right. I have Justin here. Welcome.
Hey, nice to see you again. How are you?
You too. I'm good. How are you?
I'm psyched to be here.
Yeah, La La Land.
Mm-hmm.
Kennedy is on the mic too.
Hello.
Hello, Miss Kennedy.
We'll see if she has anything to add today.
I will attempt.
So today we're going to be talking about PCOS. This is a really hot topic. When I posted it on my Instagram, I got hundreds and hundreds of questions, and it's something that I've been diagnosed with myself. I think it's kind of up in the air whether I actually have it or not. Justin is giving me a look. He's shaking his head right now. And I think that might be common. I think a lot of people, now he's nodding his head. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are diagnosed with it and don't necessarily have it. We might have some of the symptoms, but so I'm really interested to learn as well. I am going to start by just talking about PCOS, establishing what it is a little bit, and then I'm just going to go into listener questions because
yeah.
There were so many. So
Totally.
So why don't we just start with the beginning? PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. What exactly is it?
Yeah, I mean, the nuts and bolts of it is simply, it's this, you know, confluence of genetic, environmental, hormonal factors that basically cause a whole host of symptoms that a lot of women listening probably have, which is related to, you know, skin tags and, you know, maybe hair loss, hair growth, amenorrhea, menorrhagia, heavy periods.
Okay, back up. Amenorrhea and what? For layman's
terms. Like no ovulation.
Yeah.
Inovulation. Okay. No period. Not ovulating, I guess. And menorrhagia, so heavy flow, maybe painful periods, and dark hyperpigmentation of the skin, maybe. Usually depression. Sometimes I hear a lot as well. Brain fog, waking, and infertility, obviously, is a very, very common one as well. So, I mean, that's generally with a diagnosis, doctors will say you need to have two out of the three criteria, which is you need to have anovulation or some sort of menstrual cycle irregularity. You need to have hyperandrogenism, which I should have mentioned as well, which causes hair loss and or hair growth.
And what exactly is that?
Just a high testosterone.
Okay.
You know, and other precursors.
High androgens, so high.
Right. DHEA, DHEAS, things like that, which, you know, are predominantly what men have, but women have in greater than normal quantities. So hyperandrogenism, anovulation or no period, or and also ovarian cysts, which mm-hmm. is one of these things that a lot of women will say, or the doctors will say, you have PCOS because you have multiple cysts. But technically, they are follicles, so it's a misnomer. It shouldn't be called polycystic anyway. It should be called polyfollicular, if anything.
Okay.
So aside from that, they are normal for a young woman to have. You have cysts or follicles, right? So one of the biggest misconceptions is that you need to have multiple cysts in order to have PCOS, which isn't true at all. So you could technically have, and I've had women as clients who have had only high androgens in a normal period, or just a dysregulated period and normal androgens. And it's a weird set of combination of things. So we get very, set on following a strict criteria, which is maybe one of the shortcomings with conventional medicine, because a lot of times for that reason, then a lot of women get misdiagnosed because their doctors are saying that, well, you don't really have it because you don't have these other issues.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, like for me, I was diagnosed because I have cystic ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking like an ovarian cyst, like one, it's multiple. They call it like a string of pearls, right?
Right.
And irregular periods. So mm-hmm. that was, and my hormones are always normal when we test them. And I don't really have any of the other markers. But I was diagnosed in my early 20s, I believe, and just put on birth control.
Yeah.
That's kind of the protocol.
Standard. Yeah.
So I want to rewind a little bit, though. Are people who do have it, are they born with it, or is it something that they develop over their life?
Yeah, it's a lifestyle sort of condition. Syndrome is the appropriate term, not a disease, really.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's definitely related to environment and a lot of other things, but there are definitely genetic, what we call polymorphisms or genetic variants that can get you on the spectrum, right? Increase your risk for it, but doesn't mean you're going to get it, just like an autoimmune disease, right? So there's certain genes that are responsible for metabolizing and detoxifying estrogens, for example. We know a lot of women have estrogen dominance. So if that's going on in the liver, for example, where you do that, then maybe that's one way for women to end up with PCOS, or even endometriosis, which kind of falls in that same sort of path.
And what exactly is endometriosis too? Let's define it so that we can separate the two.
Yeah, and a lot of women will have both, actually, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of overlap between the two. But endometriosis is simply just this condition where the endometrium, right, that's the lining of the uterus, that tissue is growing in other areas in the body where it shouldn't. So it's generally just transferring over, I'm trying to think of the best term.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically just like, you know, channeling into your fallopian tubes, your ovaries, your pancreas, maybe your stomach. It can get in your lungs. It's crazy. The stuff can migrate in different areas of the body. So that can get pretty nasty. And that's also driven a lot by estrogen dominance. Not only that, but we find that there are genetic, you know, variants and issues that are kind of priming that mechanism. But again, it doesn't mean you're going to get either of those conditions just because of the bright genes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I feel like we kind of have to separate this into like people who are misdiagnosed with PCOS or have symptoms that mimic PCOS mm-hmm. or are similar, and then actual PCOS, right?
Yeah.
So let me think of how to phrase this. So people who truly do have PCOS, you're saying that it's something that develops as a result of lifestyle? And what does that look like?
Yeah, out of lifestyle. So let's take a step back and say that we could probably categorize PCOS into two different phenotypes. We have the lean PCOS type, we have the obese type. Some might go to say there is the sort of inflammatory type and, you know, insulin resistant type, but they kind of all like mishmash and mix together. But if you look at the lean women out there, especially in the fitness and competition world, a lot of them end up having it and they don't realize they have it. And I've had a lot of women come to me and I've been able to see that. And that's all stress induced because they have high androgens and DHEA and sometimes insulin resistance and issues with that. But yeah, that's strictly because you beat your body to the ground for months on end and voila, here's where you end up. Or you have hypothalamic amenorrhea, which simply just means you have, you know, low progesterone and estrogen and all the sex hormones. So it can kind of go in either of those directions. With the obese type, though, yeah, I mean, that's largely lifestyle as well, right? Because if obesity is lifestyle, then that can easily mm-hmm. cause PCOS for mm-hmm. some people who have the right genes again.
Okay, so yeah. For somebody who is doing competitions or something, or is like on a really strict diet and they're beating themselves up, like you said, and they develop this, do they also develop cystic ovaries or just the other symptoms?
They can. The thing with this is that, and you can tell by their period, I think, what's kind of happening, because if it's irregular or non-existent, which is actually not that common. Most women, I think, with PCOS I've seen, from my experience, that is, have a cycle, but it's just very skewed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very drawn out, you know, menses and heavy bleeding, but they do ovulate here and there. Not all of them, though. But really what's driving all this dysfunction is up top, right? Think about if you have a lot of stress, for example, or high insulin from diet and lifestyle, which, you know, actually is stemming from stress, too. And testosterone and environmental estrogens, right? All these things kind of come together and they can really skew the luteinizing hormone and the follicle stimulating hormone that comes out of the pituitary, right? And when that happens, you end up, really, to keep it simple so you understand why this, you know, these cysts happen, you end up stopping the follicle from maturing into, you know, its late stage graphene follicle, where then it, you know, that's where the egg gets released, right? So it goes through a number of series, which I won't really get into, but it basically stops mid-stage, and you end up having a lot of these preantral follicles. And when you have high levels of luteinizing hormone from high estrogen or insulin, for example, then they start responding to that hormone, and then they start to multiply. And then that's where you start to create a lot of androgens out of that as well. So it's a really complicated series of events that happens, but you can see where it comes from, where it stems from, right?
Mm-hmm. And then does that stress that the body, so stress can cause all of that or exacerbate it? And
both.
Then does all of that kind of exacerbate stress back? Is it like
a
cycle?
Yeah. It's one vicious cycle. Because
crazy.
We can see that people who have high androgens, they will have high insulin, because we know androgens increases insulin resistance. And insulin resistance increases and worsens high androgens. And you have inflammation, and that can worsen estrogen dominance as well because of the aromatization. So, you know, it's just a lot of mechanisms and things like that. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's all interconnected like this. So once you really fix one thing, you know, you really fix all of it. It's like a domino effect.
Mm-hmm. So when somebody goes to the doctor and the doctor sees whatever symptoms they see fit to diagnose somebody with PCOS,
mm-hmm.
It seems like the most common thing, the most common protocol, like we said earlier, is to put somebody on birth control.
Yeah.
How does that, why is that the solution, do you think? And how does that affect everything?
Yeah. So to be fair, birth control is not quote unquote bad, right? Definitely has this utility and need. I think it's a huge mistake. And I'll hear I hear people in the alternative space say like, yeah, birth control is bad and we need to get off of it and not use it.
But that's really interesting because for years I didn't go on it. And you know all of my issues probably more than anybody because we've been working together. I have tried to stay away from birth control just because I felt like I didn't absolutely need it anyway. But I kind of had this like fear about going on it because there is so much noise in, I guess, like you said, the alternative space, but it just seems to be everywhere now that birth control is like evil and it's going to fuck your body up and don't take it.
Well, the thing is that, yes, it is a Band-Aid if we're going to use it for PCOS or any hormonal issues like acne, for example, or even a missing period or a heavy period, rather, not a missing period. And so it's important in certain situations, but right. Like if you have a lot of heavy flow, like you're probably gonna need it until we get to the root cause, you know? So there is that sort of angle I take. But yeah, for sure, like there is an issue with it because we're not getting to the underlying problem, right? And we actually can find in research, which is kind of ridiculous because a lot of women out there don't know that not all birth control is created equal. And we know that some can have sort of androgen effects, estrogen effects, which simply means that it can actually increase androgens and increase estrogens, and some can do vice versa, the opposite. So no one really knows this because doctors are probably just getting, you know, hearing it from the rep, the drug rep, being like, here, just use this and give it to your patients, right? And we need to be informed about this because this is really important. In fact, my friend, Dr. Jay Tita, he's really good with this, and he can shed more light on this, but that's where you can start to see how if you're on the wrong type of birth control, if you decide to take it, you might be actually doing more damage than you want. So just for example, we know that, you know, orthotricycline, which is a common one, that has a sort of low androgen impact. And that's probably one that you may want to use, recommend or ask your physician for your OB, I guess, right? If it's possible. But the ones that may be a problem and worsen androgen levels are, you know, Plan B, for example, you know, which is a lot of, you know, synthetic progesterone, right? So levonorgestrel, technically speaking. And there's some other ones. Norgestrel is the other one that probably has a high androgen impact as well that maybe is not helpful. And desogestrel is the other one. So these are just like the overall names for it, but they have specific brand names that underlie, or I'm sorry, or underneath all those. So it's hard.
What about progesterone only birth control? Because that was something that was recommended to me for years. I mean, and how it relates to PCOS. Is it helpful at all?
Which one are you talking about? Do you know?
I don't remember the name of it, no, but I know it was progesterone only.
Yeah.
I didn't take it.
Yeah. I think, again, that I don't know. I mean, honestly, a lot of women I've talked to and seen are not using progestin only. A lot of them are just combos, right? And so, but I think, again, the same thing. The whole purpose of it is to stop your cycle. That's really all it's doing. You're not normalizing anything with birth control, hormonal birth control, that is, let's be clear. And so you're just shutting things down because it's just creating a lot of havoc with what you're going through. So, again, you make your own informed decision. That's, you know, if that's the way you want to do things and live your life, that's fine. But it's really important for me to say to women who have PCOS, like, you still have the underlying dysfunction at a deep level. And it has a long list of negative health outcomes and consequences, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular issues, endometrial hyperplasia. I mean, maybe all those things, just depending on what you're doing and how everything else looks in your health, right?
Yeah. So can we unpack that a little bit? Like, what are the short-term ramifications of dealing with this and maybe putting a Band-Aid on it and not getting to the root cause? And what are the long-term implications?
To be fair, I think that PCOS in the short term, if you just got diagnosed and you're just kind of, you know, managing your way through life and taking band-aids, and you want to do that because you just want to avoid it and actually put in the work, for example, I guess, you can probably get away for a bit, honestly, I think. You know, everyone's different. Just don't, you know, quote me on that. But it's really when this goes on for years and years and years and we just really ignore everything else. And that's where I think it gets really treacherous, because I've spoken to plenty of women who try to get pregnant, and I'm not surprised, but they end up having two, three, four miscarriages, or just suffering even more, and don't get pregnant at all. And so there's a reason for this, and it's because of all the hormonal dysfunction, inflammation that's going on that's inside the body, right?
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about how all of the dysfunction and inflammation affects other functions of the body. Yeah. So we know that like one of the symptoms with PCOS is acne, skin problems. Is that from the androgens?
Yeah.
Okay. Totally. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So we know that there are receptors for testosterone in the hair follicles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that if you have a lot of that going on, you eat a lot of animal products or dairy, for example, that can increase sebum, and that's oil, right? That's on our skin that it's normal to have. That causes a lot of this sort of feeding for the bacteria P. acnes, which kind of feeds on that, right? And that's how you develop acne, because it just snowballs like that. But guess what? It's the testosterone, it's the IGF-1, it's the insulin, the hormones that are in food. Not just that, but like that's a big source for a lot of people, and that just drives more oil production. That's how you get acne, really. I mean, it's more to it than that, but like that's one of the biggest things, and you'll be surprised. I mean, you cut gluten and dairy out for a month and the acne goes away most of the time.
That was somebody's question, so
good.
There's the answer. But I cut out gluten and dairy, and I've been having skin problems.
Again,
like
it's more than just that.
Crazy.
I know. It's not that simple. I'm saying for a lot of people, for some people, it can be really helpful and be the only thing they need.
Right.
For others, no, it's driven by more things. And, you know, again, that it can come back to like your skin health and your skin microbiome and what sort of species you have on your skin that could be contributing to acne. And maybe your gut, and if there are infections in there, or if you have liver inflammation and you have toxins that are getting, or you know, not getting out of the body, but they're coming out through the skin, because their skin's your largest organ. It's a detoxification organ, right?
Yeah.
So think about all those things as well.
So what about the gut? How is PCOS and hormone dysfunction in the gut related?
Yeah. Well, think about this. So if we're taking birth control, for example, we know that's almost like I'll put it like this, like a nuclear bomb going off in your gut, kind of like antibiotics in a way. I'm not trying to scare you or discourage you from taking it, but it's important to understand that we know that it can really do a lot of damage with long-term use in the gut. It can deplete like a dozen or so nutrients in the body, and it can cause leaky gut and do all these things. And so if you have dysbiosis from birth control, it's not just that, but like that's one of the things that can cause it. But again, stress can do that as well, right? And so, and who knows if you were exposed to, you know, candida, fungus maybe, or some other microbe. And so these things can, we actually know in the research that women, mostly, I would say, the obese type, have dysbiosis or some sort of overgrowth of bad things that can contribute to, again, feeds into the cycle of inflammation and all that stuff. And so we know that they have dysbiosis, and that's something that, again, is a hidden missed cause for, you know, really resolving PCOS. And we have to address that. Not everybody has that, you know, but it's one of the things I found. And I think especially for the lean women who are in the competition or fitness world, because they're under a lot of stress, and I find a lot of them do have some sort of SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or candida or fungus, even like vaginal yeast infections, maybe, may not be related, but it's all this stuff I see, and it's, you know, it doesn't really surprise me, you know?
What about energy levels and mood?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of women with PCOS have depression all the time. You know, energy fatigue is huge. I mean, I've never met a woman who doesn't have fatigue. And if you think about it, so mitochondria, if you know what that is, it's an organelle in your cell. It creates like pretty much it's your energy powerhouse, right? So we already know in the research that PCOS can cause mitochondrial dysfunction. I was actually looking at a study ironically today about this. And so that's really important because if you have inflammation and oxidative stress and free radicals floating around because of your condition and your PCOS, then that's going to contribute to your fatigue, right? And if you have insulin resistance, that's also going to do that because guess what? You can't get calories into your, you know, your muscle cells and they can't generate energy that way. And so it's a convergence of a lot of things. And this is also important for fertility. Your oocytes, you know, the cells in the ovaries have a lot of mitochondria. If they're damaged, how do you expect to get pregnant, right? Mm-hmm. So it affects things in a lot of ways. And then with the mood stuff, I'm not really sure. I think it probably relates to inflammation because that can be systemic. And I know that depression is, well, as a whole, is largely inflammatory based, not some like quote unquote serotonin deficiency as, you know, medicine has kind of indoctrinated us to believe. But
I was telling Kennedy, you're such a contrarian.
Yeah, I know.
I like it. Shake things up.
And so I see depression a lot, and I think it's probably related to inflammation and potentially energy as well. The deficit is related to what I said before about mitochondria stuff. It's hard to know, but I generally will say, I'll tell you a clinical pearl here. L-carnitine is something that I use a lot, and that seems to be helpful with depression.
What is it again?
L-carnitine. Okay. It's just a supplement you can take, but bear in mind that it's still likely a band-aid because you need to heal everything else, right? But it can be useful.
It's like an and, like
right
something therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, this is all very bleak. Is it curable?
Okay, so
then we'll get to questions where we can talk about specifics.
Yeah.
But like, is this something that we have to live with forever?
Yeah. Well, the short answer is no. Mm-hmm. It is, if lifestyle got you in here, lifestyle can get you out. Plain mm-hmm. and simple. I don't care what your doctor says. Like, you need to, you know, understand the truth of it. And a lot of times we think that we're doomed. This is our fate and destiny because that's what the doctor said. And we just look at him as the, you know, he or she as the leader and the authority. And we just trust that.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that, and I've done this so many times with women, that you can completely reverse and get in remission. And that's really what it is. So no, we're not curing anything. And that's a bad term to use because it implies that you're never going to get it back again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can get it back. But you
can manage it.
Right. It's all about managing it and it's really, honestly, I think it's very easy to manage if you understand your body and you really honor that and listen to your intuition and you know what got you here and you know what can get you out of it and you maintain that. And so it's really reversing PCOS, I would say. That's the correct term.
I want to rewind a little bit. You said if lifestyle got you in, lifestyle can get you out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you said this before and I just missed it, but are there any cases where lifestyle doesn't get you there and it just happens? It's just how your body's made.
I can only speak from my experience. I've never seen anything that suggests that, no.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, I don't know if you have an exact number, but I mean, how many people do you think are misdiagnosed with this?
You know what? I'd be lying if I said I knew and actually looked into that. I have no idea. It's hard to know that because we speculate that with other conditions like, you know, even Lyme disease. I can mm-hmm. tell you Lyme if you want, but like PCOS, I actually don't know.
Yeah.
I think that because we don't spend a lot of time looking into the fitness population and what I said before about kind of how the doctors are looking for, you know, ovarian cysts and other biomarkers that need to be elevated or high luteinizing hormone, which doesn't have to be high, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, honestly, a lot of women are getting misdiagnosed or undiagnosed, rather. So mm-hmm. hard to say, but I think what's more important is you being aware that, you know, if you have these symptoms and you're listening to this and it makes sense to you that you know, really consider it despite what your doctor says. You know, if he says, he or she says you don't have it, what is your body saying to you? Right? You got to honor that because you might just be you know, hurting yourself down the road mm-hmm. and not knowing it.
Yeah. I mean, I said it before and I'll say it again. I was like kind of astonished by how many people wrote in the last 24 hours with questions. And, you know, the people that follow me are mostly like healthy, young, youngish, vibrant women. And I was like, wow, all these people have or have been diagnosed with PCOS. It's just like kind of shocking. So let's get to audience questions because there were so many.
Sure.
I tried to kind of compile them in an organized manner, but we might jump all over the place. So why don't we start with the most common one, which is there a diet or a specific way of eating to best manage symptoms? Or, like you said, to reverse it?
Yeah. So the first thing I'll say is diet is important, but that alone probably, from my experience, will not get you the, you know, the full results you want in intermission. So a lot of women will do keto and mm-hmm. just think that, okay, well, low carbs, low insulin, you know, that sort of logic, I guess. And they're not wrong for thinking that. Keto's the rate, you know, the rage these days and all that stuff. And so it can be helpful. And we know in studies, there's like one study, I think, that shows that keto is actually really good for reversing PCOS in obese people. I don't know. Actually, it's not helpful at all from what I found in lean type, because it's more stressful mm-hmm. to the body to create ketones. And that's a very, you know, energy draining process. Mm-hmm. And so that can actually be kind of counterproductive. So anyway, the point is that the food type, the quality probably matters more to me. You know, you want to control your carb intake. You don't want to be eating like 400 grams of carbs and pounding, you know, cheesecake every day. But like, that's, you know, an obvious thing, I think. But aside from that, dairy and animal products probably need to go. That's the first thing I look for.
Like meat?
Yeah, red meat.
Okay.
You have some leeway with poultry and...
What about fish specifically salmon?
Yeah. Gee, I wonder why you asked that. So, yeah. Seafood, you're okay with that for the most part. But it's definitely the red meat that has the more concerning things because of the hormones in it. That can just fuel the fire for you, you know? So I would say cutting out gluten and dairy, maybe gluten, actually. Mm-hmm. Not always. It's hit or miss. Depends on the person. But dairy and meat are the first two for me. And then I kind of go from there. I don't really do much else after that because I don't really have to. But that's kind of how I've seen it.
What about soy products?
Yeah, right? It's a good question. Soy, I hear a lot of people kind of go back and forth with it. Some saying it's, you know, worse for estrogen. It's, you know, it's this, you know, just it's an endocrine disruptor, all this stuff. From what I found in the research, actually, by the way, it's a mild sort of endocrine disruptor. It's really, unless you're pounding like, you know, 2 pounds of, you know, tempeh a day, then I didn't mean to make that rhyme, by the way, then then that might be a concern. But actually, I tell my clients to consume soy because we know that it actually helps with reducing luteinizing hormone. So and androgens, actually, a little bit. So that's why I like to use it. And I tell them to integrate a little bit of it if they're willing. But, you know, again, it's not going to magically fix your problems. You have to do other things. But that's probably kind of where I go with diet. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Speaking of endocrine disruptors, what about like beauty products, products? Is that a major factor?
Yeah, I think it can be. And I will definitely recommend to women to check and assess their personal care products and see if they're loaded with parabens and phthalates and dioxins and other things like that. Because that could, you know, at a low level, just contribute to the problem. So I'm like, I like to try to cover all the bases, you know, mm-hmm. But you don't need to like completely revamp your entire sort of setup at home in your bathroom. I'm more concerned about like stress, honestly, psychological stress, emotional stress and physical stress more than that stuff. But that's kind of how I see it in my head, like this hierarchy of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's something to consider, but it wouldn't be the top priority for me. Just that's my bias, I think.
So something that I was kind of surprised by was that you are a proponent of intermittent fasting for PCOS, right?
I am. Yes.
Sounds like there's a but coming.
Well, the thing, yeah, the one sort of potential issue is that if you're hypoglycemic, which you may most or not, that can definitely be a bad idea, right? Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, though, for PCOS, yes, I like using intermittent fasting, again, if women are willing to do that, because we know that when you don't, you know, eat for extended periods of time, you reduce insulin, right? Glucose levels go down. And guess what? That's what we want, right? So you develop greater insulin sensitivity, which is why resistance training is more helpful than cardio, for example. You know, you're improving that sensitivity so that when you eat foods that are creating a lot of insulin, you can get it in your muscle cells and start to burn it instead of it floating around. So I like intermittent fasting for a number of reasons, but like, yeah, it's definitely for the insulin sort of stuff, and it will help with basically inflammation, I would say, at a really broad way of explaining it.
But isn't there always kind of a risk that it can be another stressor on your body and it can react that way?
Yeah, and it's tricky, right? So I'm not going to say that everyone needs to do it. You really, again, it comes down to like assessing your tolerance to it and whether or not you feel like it's appropriate for you and how you feel with it. Initially, yes, when you first do it, it's not really going to be fun. You're going to have to bite the bullet and deal with the hunger pains and stuff. But after that, I was doing it for 3 years at one point. So like, it's pretty manageable, but you know, a 16-hour fast is pretty like standard as a protocol that a lot of people follow. And that can, you know, honestly, you don't even need to follow that. It's like, okay, if your feeding window is say 9 hours out of the day, okay, then why don't, and say, for example, you wake up and you eat at 8 a.m. So why don't you push it back to, let's say, 10 a.m.? Like, mm-hmm. Even that little shift can be quite beneficial, right? So you don't need to wait till like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a few specific questions from people about kind of diet and, mm-hmm. and weight and all that. So how can someone manage weight gain with PCOS?
Yeah, I know. It's a million-dollar question, right? Everyone wants to know that.
Yep.
I think what's really, I'll just make a comment on this. A lot of times I hear women say that their physician says that you will lose weight and you'll quote unquote fix your PCOS. Do you know how asinine that sounds? Like, how about the other way around, right?
Right.
Reverse and heal your PCOS and you can lose weight. And that's really what we need to do. So with that being said, if you've understood what we've said up to this point and you're listening, you can see that, okay, we have potentially high androgen issues, depending on my symptoms, if I have hair loss or hair growth, skin tags. Okay. That's a sign of high androgens. It's really common. You can pretty much tell somebody has that without doing a lab test for testosterone or DHEA or DHEAS, for example. And then considering that with the typical insulin resistance issues, and it's difficult to know, and I'm just going to say this because you can run a fasting insulin test, you can do all these, you know, HbA1c maybe, fasting glucose. It's difficult because different cells in the body can be insulin resistant compared to others. And so you can't measure that. We're just looking at a broad spectrum, like sort of idea of what your insulin sensitivity might be like. And so from the research, I think it's like pretty much clear that somewhere between 60, maybe 50 to 80% of women with PCOS have insulin resistance. So you should just assume, and I like to assume women have it. And so we need to address that. And so you can't just cut calories and cut your carbs and expect to lose weight. It'll help, but over and over, I hear that women do that and they don't get results. They don't lose any weight at all. They maybe lose a pound a month and something ridiculous like that. So it's really, really frustrating. And I hear you. I really do. But you have to get the hormones in balance. You know, thermodynamics is really important. We know that, you know, calories in versus calories out. But guess what? Hormones matter just as much, if not more, in this context.
Yeah. Somebody asked if calories in and calories out are kind of irrelevant at this point.
You know, I mean, it matters, but don't expect to lose weight, and or don't be surprised, rather, that you can lose weight if you're literally eating 1,100 calories, and it's because your hormones are out of balance. I mean, we could even get into, like, thyroid, and maybe there's a lot of thyroid issues with this, too, because I see a lot of women with PCOS also have hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's, which is autoimmunity, and so that just complicates things even further, and so we really got to get the hormones in check. Progesterone, testosterone, estrogen, thyroid potentially. And when you do that, that really makes the biggest difference in weight loss.
What are your thoughts on metformin? Another Band-Aid or can it help?
Sure. It is a Band-Aid, but guess what? Berberine is just as... No, it's crazy, but like it's a natural, you know, sort of remedy, but it is as effective as berberine and it doesn't have the same... It doesn't have any side effects. It's phenomenal. It is one of nature's best sort of therapies for this stuff, with getting insulin down and improving sensitivity. So I really like using that. Generally, like 1,000 milligrams. No, actually, I use 500 milligrams, like 3 times a day. Yeah, it's great. Now, again, not a panacea, you know, but it can definitely help a lot.
Mm-hmm. What about Vitex?
Again, Vitex is a superstar sort of supplement as well, because it, you know, it works on the hypothalamus and changing how the hormones, the hormonal output rather. So we can, we find that it's actually hit or miss. It's hard to know. Everyone's different, responds differently. So a lot of women have estrogen issues that are higher relative to progesterone. And so we need to get progesterone up. And this is actually quite useful for women who have amenorrhea or no period, right? Or have maybe luteal phase defect. So we know that Vitex can help modulate the hypothalamus in a way where it reduces luteinizing hormone and thereby increases progesterone through a downstream effect. So it does, well, I'll tell you what, it does take time. So don't expect to sort of like work and see a magical shift happen in a month. It can probably take at least 3 months for it to kick in. But I like using that for sure. And that's what I'll use around maybe 1,000 milligrams a day. So it is really good for sure.
Okay, so what about exercise and the best kind of exercise to manage symptoms and the best kind of exercise, I guess, overall for balancing hormones?
Mm-hmm. So, again, we got to talk about the type. If you're obese, you have a lot of weight to lose. Resistance training, weightlifting to some degree, and some cardio probably would be really good, and I recommend that. Most of my clients are lean type. In fact, like 90% of them are. So I work on usually resistance training, but not too much, because guess what? That's probably what got them into this mess, right? Is lifting too much, spending 2 hours in the gym, and also doing a lot of cardio, which is actually just worsening the whole problem, because you're increasing cortisol and that increases glucose and that increases insulin resistance, right? So I don't program cardio at all. Actually, I really don't recommend it, because again, it's a stress to the body. It's, you know, cortisol is a great stress reducer as much as it's a great stress inducer, right? So it's my recommendation is to do like short, maybe half hour resistance training workouts, maybe 3-4 times a week, two to four, you know, somewhere in that range. Again, it depends on people's symptoms and how they're responding, how they feel. Like, we have to go off that. So I can't really nail it down to one thing, but that's my broad recommendation.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So yeah. I will stop doing cardio today. What was the eye roll for?
Listen, I wasn't sure about a lot of things with that, but for you, but.
Okay, let's see. Where are we? Okay, so you said in the hierarchy, stress would be the most important factor. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, but that's honestly my bias, because I've just spoken to so many women and I know that they're physically stressed because they're the lean type. They did a competition. They were dieting for like two, three years. And yeah, there's emotional stress too. Maybe they had trauma in the past. I mean, it's just stuff, patterns I've seen. And so we need to get that under control, because it'll just literally derail your hormones even further. And you can't diet and supplement your way out of PCOS if you have that going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very, very focused on emotional stress, physical stress, and yeah, everything else underneath that, which would include gut health and hormones and detoxification, liver health, right? And ultimately managing inflammation, which will happen when you do all the other things. You with me?
I'm trying, yeah. So I'm just trying to figure out, because there are so many different things that are affected, like, how do you decide where to start? I mean, I feel like you can't, like, even with your gut, you can't, it's difficult to treat gut issues if your stress is out of control, right?
And yeah,
and
exactly.
If you have gut issues and hormone issues, you can't treat the hormones until the gut is under control. So how do you, it just seems like such a maze. Like, how do you decide where to start? What is the best place to
start?
Yeah,
and it can get really confusing, because a lot of women will feel overwhelmed to think that they need to do all these 12 things at once, because their coach or practitioner or whoever they hired is telling them to do all these things. But then if you're stressed out about doing all those things, how is that helping the cause? So my whole thing is keeping it simple, right? And integrating or introducing new small things like every week or two, depending on how they're dealing with it and how they're doing. So honestly, it's making those diet changes that we spoke about before. It's seeing what stressors are going on in their life and how we can heal that, manage it. And that's just very, very case dependent. It depends on what they're really going through. So once we do that, then we give it some time and see what, you know, we use subjective scales to see like what their fatigue is like and what their gut issues are like and other symptoms that may be improving or not. And then we go from there. I make outcome-based decisions. If they're getting better, cool, we maintain that. And not going to add more to it. There's no point. I see no point. And then if they're not getting better, if there's still lingering issues, okay, then let's start to navigate and see if there's any issues with, you know, liver and complications, and labs will sometimes be helpful to see, and they'll show that, and sometimes I get that, but then I'll start to look at infections and see if there are, especially if they have like IBS, bloating, constipation, gas, like that type of stuff, and I kind of, you know, just go through that, and then we'll see if we really need to go further than that, then we will. But a lot of times it's sort of like a domino effect. You do these couple things and you give it some time and you're patient and you trust the process. Then you let it unfold and the body gets, you know, really back to its normal state again. It's really quite surprising to see. But again, it's hard because we want to do all these things, but you don't need to. I mean, I can't say for sure, but most people don't need to take 15 supplements to and cut out all these calories to get results. You know, it can be counterproductive and maybe not needed at all.
What if somebody is on birth control and then they decide to make all these lifestyle changes?
Mm-hmm.
Is the goal to get off birth control?
Yeah, and that'll actually happen, because I mean, I can't tell anybody to get off birth control. Mm-hmm. It's not my job. And so what we want to do is do all these root cause things while they're on birth control if they need to be on it. And yeah, we start to have that conversation and I can be like, hey, so you're starting to improve in these areas. So why don't you have that conversation with your OB and see about jumping off it or weaning off of it? Or if you just want to stop on your own, I mean, that's your call, right? Ball's in your court. You make your own informed decision. But yeah, I mean, that would be ideally the outcome we want, because, you know, we know that if you do everything right, you don't need birth control anymore.
Is there a thing called post-birth control PCOS?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody asked about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually quite common. And what I can say, though, is that it can mimic PCOS. Doesn't mean you really always have it. But yeah, you can see a lot of acne and weight gain and gut issues maybe. And that is something to think about. But you'll know if you have PCOS, if you have these other sort of issues with hair, you know, hair growth, hair loss, skin tags maybe, depression. And then you can confirm it probably with, you know, some lab markers. And that's what I would say to really, you know, cement that, to see if you have it. But not everybody has PCOS coming off of birth control, but you can, because what happens a lot of times is there's sort of like a boomerang effect where you suppress all your hormones, testosterone's really low, and then all of a sudden your body's trying to regulate and get it back up again. And then we have this sort of like overcompensation and you create a lot of testosterone, and guess what happens? Acne, right? That's what we see a lot.
Mm-hmm. What about for people who have been diagnosed with PCOS or they're experiencing these symptoms and they want to conceive?
Yeah, so you really want to, I mean, I could say this a million times, but you really want to make sure you get your health in check and get this under control because, yeah, it's not a surprise that I hear this literally every month, it seems like, you know, somebody tries to get pregnant and it doesn't happen or they get a miscarriage and they're really frustrated and they do clomiphene and, you know, IVF and they're trying to do all these sort of loopholes to get pregnant, but you can do that. Honestly, if you get pregnant, great. But understand that you still have PCOS. And if you're not getting pregnant, it's because you have PCOS that's not been managed right. So you can't heal. I mean, you can't get pregnant in a unhealthy environment. It's that simple. So I hate to be blunt like this, but you're really doing a disservice for a lot of people in your life and to yourself if you're trying to be like, I need to get pregnant because I want to and I'm anxious and I just like, it's been my goal my whole life. Like, great, you will do that and you'll get there, but you'll have a greater chance if you get your body where it needs to be to do that optimally, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, we kind of covered this before, but the other most common question that I had was about PCOS and acne and how to manage acne. Mm. So you mentioned before animal products.
Yeah, so it depends on what else is going on. If you have testosterone issues, like, yeah, we have to manage, control that and work that out. But there are definitely issues with the animal and animal products in the food. So that can, if you just do that alone, that can make, you know, it can really go take you really far. But beyond that, actually, if I'm trying to think for a minute. I did a whole whiteboard Wednesday on this, actually. I just don't remember exactly what I covered in that. But yeah, so you want to heal the gut for sure, because again, these infections like SIBO or Candida can definitely exacerbate acne, maybe. But aside from diet as well, you also want to look at your stress, because I mean, I think women know that if they're stressed out, they can definitely develop acne for a period of time. So that's definitely an important area to focus on. Aside from that though, we can do things at the skin microbiome level. So we know again that some bacteria and fungus can maybe contribute to this sort of acne issue. And again, that may not be related to PCOS. That could be related to women who just have acne. They don't know why, but a lot of times it's related to the gut, right? So the skin is a reflection of your gut health a lot of times. So I really think of it that way. But again, you can do things for your skin. And there are some probiotics that you can use topically that I know are helpful. Mother Dirt is a product I've used actually with clients. And that's basically like live bacteria for your skin. That can be helpful, right? Tea tree oil, that sort of stuff, which some of you may have used already before. But I really think about detoxification, seeing what sort of environmental toxins may be women might be exposed to, because that could really be fueling the whole problem, right? And that's hard to know, but you have to see like your lifestyle and what you've been exposed to in your environment, whether it's you work in a very toxic place, maybe at the nuclear power plant, or I don't know who does what in a coal mine, or you're in a very like you're in the garage, right, working on cars. I don't know, just throwing out random things. But you want to think about these things and like where you've been, because maybe you've harbored a lot of toxins, and it's hard to know unless you really decide to test for that stuff, which I don't really like to do. But if you improve your liver health and your gut, and you do like infrared sauna, for example, and sweat therapy, contrast hydrotherapy, that can take you. And that what that means is you're going back and forth between hot and hot shower, cold bath, jumping back and forth, dry skin brushing. Those sort of things can help with mobilizing toxins and things out of your body, which is helpful because we know that a lot of these toxins are stored in your fat cells. So if we get that out, maybe that can increase your chances of reversing or really, you know, getting rid of your acne.
Lymphatic drainage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what supplements have you found are helpful with managing symptoms and reversing?
Okay, so we talked about Berberine and Vitex. Aside from that, I will sometimes use, you know, N-acetylcysteine. I will use curcumin because of its anti-inflammatory benefits. Sometimes inositol, myo-inositol, which is really helpful for oocyte quality match and quality. So if you have infertility issues, that can be really helpful. Dienylmethane, DIM, which is a popular one, I think. And calcium D-glutarate and broccoli seed extract. And those are things that are going to help with liver detoxification. So I'm really a proponent for that because that could maybe help you in a lot of ways. And again, getting and mobilizing these toxins out of the body, which is a good thing, right? Aside from that, though, you can, if you have high androgens and testosterone, what I like to use a lot is Chinese peony. That's a really good one. And Chinese white peony, that is. And spearmint. Those are two that I like a lot. So, yeah, just some things that can be helpful. But bear in mind that you got to probably do more than just take these things, you know. But from a natural standpoint, they do have a lot of utility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I know this is very complicated, but since we're coming to a close, if somebody thinks they might have PCOS or they've just been diagnosed with it, I know it can be very overwhelming. So mm-hmm. do you have any recommendation? What would you say? Where would you say to start or what would you recommend?
Yeah, I would definitely go to an OB and see what their input is and confirm it from that point and see if they have any sort of evidence from lab testing to see if you have it. And again, they're going to check, you know, hopefully they do like a, you know, ultrasound of your ovaries and check that out. Again, maybe not necessary, and you don't need to have PCOS like we talked about before. Or you don't need to have cysts, rather, to have PCOS, I meant. And aside from that, though, if you check DHEAS levels, 17-hydroxyprogesterone, free testosterone, and then luteinizing hormone and FSH, those are a lot of the common biomarkers that you want to get tested. And that will point you in the direction as to whether or not you're on the spectrum of PCOS. But you look at that coupled with your symptoms, and that's what you have to do. If your doctor's saying, no, you don't have anything, yet you have hair loss, hair growth, depression, weight gain, and acne and skin tags and like infertility issues and everything we just talked about, what do you think the truth is? Your doctor's word or your intuition, right? I mean, that's kind of how I look at it, but you really got to listen to your body. And if you think you have it, you probably do.
Mm-hmm. We know our body's best.
Right.
Okay. Well, that we covered a lot of ground, I feel like, in a short amount of time. Thank you so much for coming.
Of course.
And
pleasure.
Your Instagram is a wealth of knowledge, as is your website, and people can work with you. So where can everybody find you?
Yeah, sure. So my website is The Autoimmune Revolution. And just so it's clear, we work with women who have endometriosis and PCOS and reproductive dysfunction. So aside from autoimmune disease, but outside of that, on Instagram, it's at Justin Janoska, JustinJanoska. And I do a lot of these, what I call Whiteboard Wednesdays, and it's all related to this sort of stuff. I have plenty, I think, on my IGTV and even my YouTube, but it's all on my page, and you can find the trainings. I have done a lot of free trainings on PCOS and talking about these different pathways and how it all unfolds like this in a more detailed way if you're interested in that, and even acne. So that's where you can find that information if that piques your interest.
And that will all be linked in the show description as well.
Cool.
And you're my first guest that I've had on twice. So if you guys didn't listen to his other episode, go back. I think it was like episode 3 or 4.
Yeah.
You were one of my first ones when it was just me and my laptop and a
mic.
Look at that. So maybe we'll have you on next time you're here. Thank you so much.
You bet. Anytime.
Bye. As always, thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you guys sharing on social media, sharing with people in your lives. Please rate, review, subscribe if you haven't already. And do all of the things. I'll talk to you next week.